You are listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast out of Wesley Seminary at Iwu. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Care.
Some of the big questions of life, whether they are being asked out loud or not, are definitely in the minds of your parishioners. They are in your church. They are happening on social media. They are happening over coffee and in cafeterias and even in classrooms where other teachers are starting to answer these questions for some of your students and parishioners. Maybe they're asking and answering them in helpful ways. Maybe they are answering and asking them in ways that are not helpful. The response to this state of affairs is not to bury our heads in the sand. It is to become resourced and to think clearly and to be courageous in asking the questions. Pastors and lay leaders, you are tasked with the responsibility to think clearly and deeply about some of these big questions of life. I'm glad you joined us today because joining us is Dr. C. Stephen Evans. Dr. Evans is University Professor of Philosophy and Humanities at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. He's the prolific author, but most recently of A History of Western Philosophy, really thick book, but really readable on the history of Western philosophy, published by InterVarsity Press in 2018. It's a great resource. We're going to talk more at length about that today, but I hope that some of this podcast encourages you and enriches you and inspires you to keep thinking about these questions, to do so courageously, because at some point you will ask them as well. And if you haven't already wrestled some answers to the ground about what's real and what's true and how we know things and how we should live, you will at one point. The crucible of ministry will put you into a place of asking those questions. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And enjoy this podcast.
I do believe very strongly in the value of philosophy for people who are going to be pastors. In fact, I'll just share one thing. I just had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a former student you probably heard of, John Ortberg. He was a philosophy major at Wheaton College under me a long, long time ago.
So he certainly has done his work to leave a good legacy and to provide lots of resources for pastors in his who have followed his influence as well. So thank you for that work that you've given to us through him too.
Yeah, well, he's tremendous. So anyway, I'm very happy to have taught people like him who've gone into the ministry.
Now, Dr. Evans, let me kind of start our conversation at the beginning, or the most beginning that I can. Maybe some of our listeners are tuning in, or they read the bio and they're kind of thinking, I don't know that philosophy applies to me, right? Maybe they're thinking that. So to kind of assuage that concern or to speak to it, maybe I'll just start by asking you this. What does philosophy mean?
Well, philosophy applies to everybody because in my view, everyone has a philosophy. Now, obviously, everyone is not a, quote, philosopher in the sense that they teach philosophy or study philosophy. But basically, a philosophy is simply a set of beliefs, a kind of worldview, the way you see, understand yourself and the world and your place in the world and your purpose in life. And it seems to me everybody has at least sort of implicit, vague ideas of this sort. So everyone has a philosophy. The question is, do we sort of think self-consciously and reflectively about those beliefs, or do we just sort of take what we have and move on from there? And of course, a lot of people do that, and that's fine. We all have to live our lives. But I do think there's value in sort of reflecting on what's most important to us. One American philosopher, William James, said that philosophy is a, quote, unusually obstinate effort to think clearly. And I think that's basically right. If you add to that, think clearly about what we might call the most important questions. Questions like, who am I? What's life for? What kind of a universe is this? Is there a God? What will happen to me after I die? Those are all basic philosophical questions that every human being has some concern with.
I think maybe some of the reason that people can be intimidated by philosophy, or at least a little bit set on edge whenever it comes up, is it a difficulty to contextualize it or to see where they are in a conversation. I know whenever we were chatting before, I said I wanted to kind of not just have a conversation between you and me, but one that invites other people into. And if a person was just to pick up you know, read something that was from a philosopher in the 21st century, they wouldn't necessarily know how to contextualize that in terms of the ongoing conversation of philosophy that's been happening for more than 2,000 years, but maybe consciously for a little bit longer than that, last 3,000, 2,500, 3,000 years or so. So you've written a book called A History of Western Philosophy from the Pre-Socratics to Postmodernism. And I find it's such a helpful way to situate where philosophical conversations are coming from and where they might be going. So maybe I've answered a bit of the question, but I wanted to put it to you. Why is history an important consideration for us to understand philosophy?
Well, history is important because, first of all, I agree with you that sometimes contemporary philosophy can seem very technical and unrelated to the concerns of ordinary people. I think that's a bad thing. It's a function of the fact that philosophy has become the province of university types. That wasn't always true. In the ancient world, a lot of people who were, you know, they were no university professors, so to speak, and so philosophy was just serious-minded people who were thinking hard about these life questions. So I think by going back to the history of philosophy, we can gain a sense of what philosophy was, what it could be, and also we can gain an understanding of how it has shaped our world, our culture today. I think one of the main value of studying the history of philosophy is you get a better perspective on the contemporary world, and you kind of see how do we come into being into the mess that we're in? That's how some people would put it. And I think that the history of ideas, the history of philosophy has a lot to teach us.
So we're going to move toward maybe an application for people who are in ministry, but you yourself are in ministry, in the ministry of teaching, the teaching profession, and in really a ministry of scholarship as well, as you are making resources available to people who you are interested in seeing grow up, both in the faith and in life and wisdom, in philosophy. So to kind of get started in that direction, I'd love to hear a little bit about your students. I know you work with graduate level students who are advanced in philosophy, but I'd love to hear some of your own take on them. What philosophical questions are they asking?
Well, they're asking most of the big questions. So let me just say something about my career as a whole, I guess. I started teaching philosophy. I felt a calling to become a Christian philosopher as an undergraduate at Wheaton College. And I felt like God was saying, this is the place I want you to serve me and my kingdom. And so that's what I've tried to do over almost 50 years now. Wow. And I started out teaching in undergraduate schools. I taught at a small school in Illinois, Trinity College. I taught at Wheaton College, St. Olaf College, and Calvin College in Michigan. And there I taught students, mainly Christians sometimes, but at St. Olaf's, lots of non-Christians also. And it was a privilege to be able to engage them in conversation about their lives and who they are and what they think about themselves. And I've never made a secret about the fact that I was a Christian and was doing and thinking about philosophy in a Christian sort of way. About 20 years ago, I got a call from Baylor University, and they said, we want you to come down here and help us start a doctoral program in philosophy, in Christian philosophy. And so I did that because I was getting letters. I was at Calvin in those days, Calvin College, and I kept getting letters from students saying, can I come and study with you as a graduate student? But Calvin in those days had no graduate program. So I came to Baylor, and I'm really feel like God had his hand on me in doing this, because we have now over 50 Baylor PhD students finished.
Wow.
And almost all of them are out there teaching philosophy as Christians. They're from many denominations and many perspectives, but they're all trying to serve Christ. So I know today that there are over 50 Christian philosophers teaching everywhere from Hong Kong to all over the U.S. And they're there partly because of myself and my colleagues here at Baylor who felt this calling to bring more Christians into the field of philosophy.
One of the things I appreciate about and would like our listeners to know is I often ask our guests, how would you like me to address them? And you're just very upfront and say, you know, whatever suits the listeners the best. So that sense of desiring to serve the wider body of Christ, just in a small way, but I think in a meaningful way, has already been embodied just in our conversation as well. And I know that so much the heartbeat of people that are listening in as well. They want to be servants. They want to be resources. They want to be pastors, whether they're officially clergy or whether they are lay leaders. They want to shepherd the young people who are following after them in the faith. They want to help bring them along and disciple them. So talk to us a little bit about your students. You said they're asking the big questions of life. What are some of those questions they're asking, and what answers might they be unfolding that are maybe good answers, and maybe what are some of the tempting answers, I might say, that the world is offering to them in light of these big questions?
Well, the big questions fall, I think, into three general areas or types. First, there are questions about what's really real, what's reality, what kind of a universe is this? Is there a God? Is ultimately the world just the product of matter plus time plus chance? Or is there a personal God behind it all? That's the most important question. And then questions about our own nature, our own reality. What are human beings? Are we a kind of cosmic accident, just something that happened? Or are we the product of a purpose? And do we have a purpose? So those are big questions. Philosophers call those metaphysical questions, but everybody has those questions, I think, and those concerns. And then secondly, and perhaps just as important or more important, how should I live my life? Is there such a thing as right and wrong? Is there moral duty, moral obligations, good and bad? Our culture often tries to tell us that morality is just a human invention, or maybe even a trick that evolution has played on us. But I'm convinced that good and evil, right and wrong, they are clues to the meaning of life and the meaning of our lives, because God has made us to be moral beings, beings who are on a quest to become like him. Now, even though we're fallen and sinful, and we need his redemptive work to really become what we were meant to be, still, without that moral framework, the Christian message would make no sense at all. So that's important. The last area of questions are questions about what can we really believe? It's not uncommon for me to encounter a student who maybe was a convert to Christianity in high school, or even in college. And they're excited, and they've experienced something wonderful, maybe in a Christian community, a life group or small group or youth group. But then they start to worry. They have doubts. They feel like, oh, is this just some sort of emotional phase I'm going through? Or is this stuff that I've come to believe really true? How can I be sure? So many people have different views. So philosophy helps us think about, what do we really know? How do we know it? When are our beliefs reasonable? And what is faith, for example? Christians are things we come to know by faith. Well, what is faith? Is faith just sort of believing without any good reason? Or is faith something that can be informed by reason? And that's what I think as a philosopher. I think God has given us minds, and he wants us to use our minds to serve him.
Of course, the classic definition for of faith seeking understanding, of right, this work of Christian philosophy, that oftentimes the one may have already had their heart captured by the faith, and the desire for it to also impact their head and to see what's the interaction between their heart and their mind. It can be a scary one. It can be daunting, but is so important. One of my own deep influential people in my own life, N.T. Wright, once said it like this. He said, sometimes people can think they are losing their faith when in fact God wants their faith to go deeper. And for many people, I think that asking these big questions and asking them courageously, because it's a scary thing to ask questions that are going to be life changing. It really is key to see them growing in their faith to ask these questions, these big questions, right? What's real? How do I know? How should I live? And especially in a globalized world that these questions aren't ones that we ask of just of our neighbors or people that are in the same class of same class with us. But given social media, these are questions that we can have answers presented to us from around the globe. And that as well can be a scary thing. If asking the questions is scary, also being open to a variety of answers from a number of different backgrounds and cultures and values can be a very daunting and scary thing as well. Now, I kind of describe it all that because I'm trying to think of the pastor who is trying to give space for these questions to be asked, right? They don't want uninformed people in their church, or if they're a youth pastor, they know that not only should they not, but even if they wanted to, they can't guard their students from these questions. At some point, it's going to be asked of them, right? How do you know? How do you know your faith is real? Or why do you live like that? Or why do you think that God is real if you can't see him, right? They're going to be asked these questions. So let me kind of, with that background in mind, just ask you, when you think of the work of training for ministry, how can a working knowledge of philosophy help pastors with this contemporary challenge?
Well, I think in a variety of ways. First of all, I think some knowledge of philosophy, especially of the history of philosophy, really helps understand how basic Christian doctrines were formed in the first place. If we look at ancient creeds like the Nicene Creed or the Apostles' Creed or the Athanasian Creed or doctrines like the Incarnation or the Trinity, it's clear that the earliest Christian theologians and pastors, they relied on Greek philosophical thinking in part in forming these doctrines. Some people would say that's a bad thing, that they should have just stuck solely to the Bible. But I myself think that God in his providence had sort of prepared the world for the introduction of the biblical revelation by giving us this sort of Greek philosophical developments. So the early Christian, you can even see it in the New Testament already. In Paul, for example, he clearly has absorbed and knows, and in the fourth gospel, in John's gospel, when John talks about the logos, the word, in the very first chapter, he's drawing on a Greek philosophical tradition at that point. So I think pastors need to know that. A second thing that I think they would really benefit from is if they know something about the history of philosophy, they will have a better understanding of the contemporary world that is shaping the people they are trying to minister to. Because the world we live in is a world that has been shaped by intellectuals, by the Enlightenment, by modern science and the influence of science and things like that. So it's very difficult to speak to that culture without understanding it. And I think we can't really understand that culture without seeing where it came from, seeing its history. So I think those are both really important. And just also in terms of a pastor having a better facility in talking about these basic questions that everybody asks and everybody thinks about.
Well, yeah, I have in mind maybe a separate category of people that we've got people who are engaged in Christian ministry and prominent Christian ministry that the online world has given them a tremendous platform, that their words are read or listened to by many people, and yet they find themselves coming face to face with some of these big questions, and sometimes they think that they're the first ones to ask them. Or I don't want to be harsh with that, because I think it's a real existentially difficult process. Maybe they think that they're all alone in asking these questions, and that nobody is there to help shepherd them through, when in reality, so much of the history of philosophical thought has been Christians wrestling through big questions of their faith that are relevant given the time that they're in. So how did Christians wrestle with the emerging requirements of to be a moral person in the Enlightenment and in light of some of the advancement of modern science? How did they keep wrestling through that? How did they wrestle through the existence of God and giving evidence and understanding who God was whenever their worldview was radically changing and moving from an Earth-centered universe to one being centered around the sun, that our galaxy moves around the sun? I think it's such a, it really is a pastoral, not simply service that people offer, but it is a requirement. It's something that pastors themselves are going to go through, whether they want to or not, at some point, and how important it is for them to go through that process before they're given platforms to kind of have these existential crises in front of all kinds of people who are watching and who are heeding their words.
Oh, I agree with that entirely. I think it's so important for pastors and youth pastors and lay leaders of all kinds to convey to people who have these questions that it's okay to ask the questions. They should convey the idea that we're fearless because we have a kind of confidence in God and in God's revelation and in biblical truth. So we're not afraid to think. We're not afraid to ask questions. That in itself is hugely important. Just conveying that confidence and lack of fear, because nothing I think is more damaging to faith to give the impression that if you think about certain things, that's dangerous. You'll lose your faith. That conveys the idea that our faith is really not very secure.
Hmm.
So it's not necessary, I think, of course, the pastor doesn't have to have all the answers to all these questions, and nor is it necessary for the philosopher to have answers to all these questions. But it's important for us to be able to say we can address them honestly and fearlessly. There are other people in our community who are helping us, who are thinking about these things, and we have resources to go to.
Joining us today is Dr. Stephen Evans. Dr. Evans is professor at Baylor University. He is a prolific author. Interestingly, whenever I was prepping for this podcast, I came across one of books of yours that I had read early on in my preparation on a philosophy of religion, also published by IVP. And interestingly, next to that was a book on ethics from the same series of Contours in Christian Philosophy by Dr. Arthur Holmes, whom you had dedicated one of your most recent works to on this history of Western philosophy. And we've been discussing the importance of understanding philosophy and a history, why history might be important to understanding philosophy, seeing where it comes from and what questions might be on offer now and how they emerged. Hopefully some of our listeners are getting a sense of confidence. We haven't delved into the big questions really in this podcast. Listeners can check out some of the other episodes that are available. I'm thinking of one in particular with Dr. Jerry Walls, who is a professor of philosophy of mine back in my seminary days. We haven't exactly delved deeply into the questions themselves, but trying to give the sense of permission to ask the questions and confidence that there are answers to be found. And it's such a difference between exploring what answers have been offered and seeing which ones are more or less appealing to us, because inevitably they are. Inevitably, our own backgrounds and stories and values shape what answers we come across are more or less appealing to us. And there's a difference between that and presuming that there are no answers at all. And I hear you say, you know, ask the questions, delve into them, see where they come from, be courageous, be fearless in asking them. To that end, maybe I just ask you, it can be kind of daunting. Maybe we have the new atheists in mind of Hitchens and Dawkins and other people who are really outspoken about their atheism and indeed are trying to make converts to atheism. And it might be easy to presume that this philosophical field or the field where the university is trying to make a purchase on pop culture and reality is that this is kind of the domain of the atheists. I'd love to hear you talk to us a little bit about what role Christians have played in the philosophical world for the last 25 or 30 years.
Well, there's no doubt that probably the majority of philosophers are atheists in this country and probably many others. But the situation has changed dramatically. When I was in graduate school a long time ago at Yale, there were almost no prominent Christian philosophers. Philosophy was almost invisible within the profession of philosophy. There were just a few of us here and there, you know. And somehow, starting in the 1970s, God started to raise up Christian philosophers, and a group of us founded a society called the Society of Christian Philosophers, which today has over 1,000 members.
Wow.
And many of the several of the members of the Society of Christian Philosophers have actually been voted presidents of the American Philosophical Association. So philosophy is still largely non-Christian or even anti-Christian, but now at least there's a Christian presence and everyone is aware of that presence. They may not like it, they may be angry about it, but there is at least a grudging respect, I think, for Christian philosophy. I like to tell my students that if they're Christian philosophers, they have a twofold sort of mission. One is they are to be God's, so to speak, witnesses to the philosophical secular world. And secondly, they are to be, you might say, people who can contribute their skills as people who have thought hard to the church. And so there you might say the philosophers of the church, and they are the witnesses to the philosophers. And I think both of those tasks are crucially important. And I'm grateful that there are so many visible Christian philosophers today, which was not true 50 years ago.
I want to close with some words that you've written. And in this, I'm not going to the most recent book that we've been talking a little bit about, A History of Western Philosophy, published by InterVarsity Press. But back to the little book you published on philosophy of religion. And you were talking in that book about the sharing of one's faith and where that might come from. It can often feel, certainly with kind of the spirit of the age, that sharing of one's faith or evangelism is this kind of parochial or colonial practice of trying to make one like us rather than simply enjoying the diversity that we all bring to it. And this is one of the things that you wrote that I think has a good purchase on our work today. You write, a religious believer who is convinced that her faith is true is not necessarily arrogant. She can, without giving up her convictions, admit fallibility and appreciate the perspectives of others. If she's a Christian who holds to her faith on the basis of special revelation, she cannot be arrogant, for she recognizes that the knowledge she has of God is not the result of her own cleverness, but is, in fact, made possible through her recognition of her own weakness. And if she feels compelled to share her faith with others, it may not be a sign of arrogant pride or imperialism, but rather the result of a humble desire for others to know the truth. Deeply woven into this book, A History of Western Philosophy, there is you've done such a nice job of reflecting the desire of those thinkers to know the truth and to be pursued, to pursue the truth. And then you've modeled for us a desire for others to know the truth as well, which I think is so much at the root of Christian mission, for others to know the truth, and not simply to know the truth, but to be known by the one who is the truth, who is the way, the truth, and the life. And I so appreciated that spirit that was started, or at least revealed in this book on philosophy of religion, and then carried through in such a helpful way in A History of Western Philosophy. Dr. Evans, I'd love for you just to maybe have a final word. What would you say to the pastor who thinks that maybe it's from a spirit of discouragement that they say, you know, I would love to take the time to think about these questions. I would love to have the time to reflect on these questions and have conversations about them, but there's just so much to do and they can't seem to get ahead. How would you, as a professional philosopher, encourage those who have a vocation of pastoral ministry from your vantage point? How would you encourage and speak life to them?
Well, I guess I would say, of course, we all know our time is finite, and my history of philosophy book is a very big book, so that might not be the first place to start. But I have, for example, a little book called Why Christian Faith Still Makes Sense. That's a very short, brief book that helps, I think, respond to the new atheists and help see why revelation, biblical revelation, can be at the center of, you might say, your worldview, your own philosophy. I would tell pastors, don't think of philosophy and the Bible as competing sources of knowledge. Rather, recognize that it's possible for a Christian to have a biblical philosophy, that is, an understanding of the world and himself and God that is shaped by the Bible, but which one can defend in the public square in conversation with secular people. And when we're doing that, that's philosophy. And I don't think Christians have to apologize that they are shaped by their faith, because I think the same thing is true of secular people. We're all shaped by the faiths that we bring to bear, bring with us when we start thinking hard about these things.
To that end, you've given us a really helpful resource at your website as well. See Stephen Evans, CSTEPHENEVANS.com, see Stephen Evans. And you got links to different resources there for purchase, but also ones to videos that people can watch and check out some of the other resources. So you're working at making these accessible as well, and I encourage our listeners to check some of those out, CStephenEvans.com. We've been talking today about a history of Western philosophy and the importance of philosophy and understanding it historically, especially as it connects with ministry. Thank you so much, Dr. Evans, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you as well, listeners, for tuning in. I want to say thank you to Cam Davis, who produces our podcast episodes, does a great job, helps me sound better than I really do, and does a great job of helping promote and make these podcasts available. Thank you to our guest today, again, Dr. Evans. Encourage you to check out A History of Western Philosophy. Thank you to InterVarsity Press for making a copy of that book available as well, to Krista Clayton for being a great teammate and publicist and encourager in this podcast world. So thank you so much to all these different people. Thank you, listeners. Check out some of the other podcast episodes available from the Wesley Seminary podcast. I mentioned one on moral theology and ethics from Jerry Walls. You might find it interesting if you are doing some philosophical thinking today as well. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.